I'm going to shock you with some bird takes that you're just going to blow your mind. Every crow study, it's like they're using another tool. Tools. We get it.
Who's the dumbest of the birds?
Explorers were like, these birds are so dumb, they keep coming right up to us wanting to be friends. Isn't that stupid? So we got there and we just immediately put them all on a spit and ate them.
What's so great about a pigeon?
Oh, I'm glad you asked.
What's one that you hate? When that bird makes that noise, you go, whew, I want to love you, but I can't. It's just tough on the ears. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Don't Make Me Come Back There. We are a funny podcast about family. My name is Dustin Nickerson. I'm a stand-up comedian, the host of the aforementioned podcast. And alongside me in our state-of-the-art recording studio above Public Square Coffee in downtown La Mesa, California, is my lovely wife, my co-host, my CFO, my best friend.
Improv partner.
We're a two-man improv troupe, Melissa... Ruth Nickerson.
Hey there.
Our producer, Andy Lara, is here as well.
Mm-hmm. Shaka.
Shaka.
Verbal shaka.
Verbal shaka. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We have a guest today. We have Joe Zimmerman on the pod. Mm-hmm. We Zoom / Riverside / whatever it is you call, however you do that. We have him in virtually.
Yeah.
That's right.
He's virtually here.
He's virtually with us right now. Mm-hmm. Well, he was when we recorded it an hour ago. But we have a very fun episode today talking to him about really, I think, two of his great loves behind comedy, golf and birds in reverse order.
Yeah, and you wouldn't like know how knowledgeable he is until you started asking him questions.
Yeah, I mean, he's talked about it on Nateland before, and you know the difference with someone who's like memorized a few facts about birds to be interesting at a party, which is not a thing that people do. But you know what I mean. Just someone who's picked up
see through it.
You can see a couple bird facts here and there. This guy really knows his stuff. Joe's mm-hmm. really knows his stuff. So we talk a lot about birds, how he got into bird watching, some fun Q&A from the patrons and backseaters on that. On bird stuff and comedy stuff, and then a lot about golf, because anytime we can talk to someone about their youth sports experience, what it was like for them, how they got it, we enjoy it so much. And golf mm-hmm. is one I know nothing about.
No.
So I'm just a pure, what your dad used to call, vacation golfer, that a couple year times a year went on vacation or with them with certain group. Sure, yeah, I'll play, you know. Mm-hmm. And it talks about how he got into it, how he realized he was very good at it pretty quick, and how he got... It's a fun story at the end of how he ended up getting to play in college, so...
Yeah, it's amazing. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so enjoy this episode with Joe. Just one thing to promote real quick here. Upcoming comedy club dates, or comedy show dates. October 3rd, I'm going to be at the Kentucky Comedy Festival in Murray, Kentucky. October 4th, I'm going to be at the Arts of the Armory in Boston, Massachusetts. 9th through 11th, San Francisco. 16th through the 18th, Kansas City. Two shows October 25th in Seattle, Washington. The late show sold out. Two shows in Corvallis the next day, October 26th, and I think they are almost sold out there. November, we have Nashville and San Diego. December, we have Tulsa, Oklahoma, Brooklyn, New Brunswick. January, Dallas, Houston. New date on sale, Charleston, South Carolina. I just cannot get enough of the Carolinas. And yes, I'm doing Raleigh right after that. February, Boise, Salt Lake, Phoenix. March, new on sale, Chicago, Rosemont, Chicago, the suburb of Chicago. New date on sale in March as well, Washington, D.C. There's lots of new dates. Everett, Washington. Yeah, I'm coming back to Everett, which means the next day I'm coming to Tacoma. Mm-hmm. Philadelphia, we're into April. Philly, have you seen all these? A bunch of new ones went on sale. Yeah, Philly. Oh, yeah, you do the bands in town. I'm sorry. April is Philly, Fort Wayne, Indiana, Portland, Oregon, Spokane, Washington. May is Vancouver, B.C. Las Vegas is on sale for May. Atlanta, Georgia. So many new dates.
You're finally doing Atlanta in the spring.
And finally. Yeah, I know. Gosh.
Not July.
Columbus, sorry. Ohio, Cincinnati, Louisville, Kentucky, and new on sale. I feel silly even promoted because it's so far away, but June 19th through 21st. Back in Denver, Colorado. Comedy Works. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Come see me on tour, DustinNickerson.com. Send us emails at don'tmakemecomebackthere@gmail.com.
We had an amazing Patreon Zoom meeting yesterday.
Mel, that was 8 days ago.
Well, I was just going to say our October date is coming.
Okay. We don't know when it is, but we'll talk about it later.
It will be announced shortly.
Appreciate you all. Enjoy this episode with Joe. Bye. Hi, Joe.
What's up?
Good to see you, man. Are you home? Are you in New York?
I'm in New York City, Astoria, Queens.
Okay. Do you do you live near Steve Rogers?
We do.
Okay. I cat sat for him, which I've never said in the past tense, cat sat. Mm-hmm. I've been to his place a couple times, but over the summer I cat sat for him. So I are you like same train stop? Are you near? How close to that area are you? Very close.
Yeah, I'm about a mile from Steve. I'm near Derek Stroop. I'm near Anthony DeVito.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ariel Elias. I got lots of people over here.
Excellent. I appreciate you making some time for us. Mm-hmm.
I have to know, is that a real brick wall or a faux brick wall?
Oh, it's a...
Is it a green screen? Yeah. Okay. I had to know.
Yeah. I got it for the 2020, all the Zoom gigs.
Yeah.
Zoom corporate gigs in 2020.
Oh, hilarious.
Really does add a lot. It just behind you. So... I like it.
Normally, I record like this, but I decided I was going to do this today.
Yeah, it was nice. Good. I like it. Mm-hmm. I like, you know, I wanted to see a little bit of your printer. yeah. This is good.
You get to pick. Let me know what you think.
Why don't you just switch it up as we go?
Yeah, I'll rotate.
If at any point our conversation is boring you, you can just start to tour
spin.
Us.
Just spin.
The spinning in the chair really adds to it as well. Well, we appreciate you making time for us. How long are you home for? Where are you at on road schedule? Did you get home yesterday or Sunday? You leave this weekend? What are you up to?
First of all, Dustin, it is my pleasure. I am not making time for you. I have all the time in the world.
That's very kind of you.
This is the best part of my day. Seeing the two of you. So no more thanks needed.
Oh.
I thank you.
Wow. Thank you. I'm
just
blushing.
Got back from Burlington. You're handsome. Both of you. So handsome. I just got back from Burlington, Vermont. The fall in Burlington. I mean, come on. Right?
You couldn't ask for better. This is the time to go. Mm-hmm.
So I was wearing my scarf. I was walking along the lake. I was drinking pumpkin spice lattes. It was everything I'd ever dreamed of.
That's nice. Were you leaf peeping?
What's that?
That's a phrase.
Leaf peeping?
Yeah, looking at leaves.
I've heard this phrase recently. This phrase has popped up in the last year because I was peeping some leaves and some wildflowers and some butterflies and some bees.
Yeah.
Not a lot of good. I didn't see any good birds. I don't know what happened. But
it feels like they're trying to reclaim the word peeping, which historically is not
a
great
negative
connotation, you know. What you say in front of peeping is very important, but leaf, leaf
so
is allowed.
You're allowed to stalk leaves.
Sorry, I don't think you even realized the joke you did there. So
it's just hitting me. It's beautiful.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. I'm soaking it in.
I'm not a comic.
I feel like there was a maybe a couple years ago, there was a lot of making fun of how much people liked fall, you know, just like basic white girls look fall. And then we kind of we've all come to grips. You're like, it is wonderful, though. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. White women were pioneers in this regard. You were early adopters to the loveliness of fall, and we've really all come along. So I'm glad that you got to enjoy it, and the best place to enjoy it. Go ahead.
There was that Onion. There was that Onion headline about, you know, autumn fall guy, excited to, whatever, be autumn fall guy.
Yeah. And it's like,
yeah. Yeah, but that's all of us.
Yeah. At a certain point, you just go, it's not unlike, maybe this is too far of a reach, but you know how it became very trendy to like make fun of Nickelback there for a while? And or like Arby's? They just become like kind of punchlines. And then you're like, actually, it's pretty great.
Yeah, there's a reason it's so popular. Yeah,
we go through these 8-year phases, and all of a sudden they're gone, and you're like, I got to update my Arby's reference.
Oh, yeah. No.
Because you hear a lot of Taco Bell, too, and you're like,
yeah,
has that come back? Has Taco Bell made a comeback with the reference?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's
IKEA,
interesting. Yeah.
IKEA is a good, you know, kind of baseline.
Yeah, it was. And Taco Bell, like comedically, Taco Bell and diarrhea were synonyms there for a minute. And I don't know that Taco Bell has ever given me diarrhea.
Not one time. I never quite understood the reference.
Normal taco stands have, sure.
They should have switched the reference to Chipotle because of all those outbreaks.
Great point. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but we all just love Chipotle.
But people just love Chipotle. Yeah. You cannot hate on Chipotle.
Well, we're gonna get removed from the Nateland Network if we come in too hot with too many of these takes. You know, we don't want to get censored. I don't know if there's big Chipotle money coming anywhere.
Yeah, nothing but good things to say about all corporations in the S&P 500.
Yeah,
yes,
just totally cool.
Publicly want to say that. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned some birds there, because we let our fans know that we're having the Joe Zimmerman on our podcast, and we have some questions for you, just from our fans, our backseaters, and then we'll get into. We got a lot of things we want to talk about here. I want to talk about the Carolinas because I know you have an attachment to them, being that you're from Asheville, right?
Or I started out in North Carolina after going to college at Davidson.
Okay. Where are you from?
Charlotte and then Asheville. But I grew up in Morgantown, West Virginia.
Okay. So that, that part of the country. I want to talk about the Carolinas a bit, Asheville, and ultimately I want to talk about golf as well, because whenever we have someone who excelled in a sport, we like to talk about their experience as a youth, particularly playing that sport.
These sports are kind of a sweet spot for us. Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know how to tease the listeners with golf and birds.
Yeah, as if you weren't already excited to be on our pod. Now I think I'm right. We are doing you a favor.
I'm going to hit. Mm-hmm. I'm going to hit you. I'm going to shock you with some golf and bird takes. So you're just going to blow your mind. Just hang around.
This question right here is from Demarius, one of our backseaters and our patrons. What is your favoritest bird sighting, and which was the most difficult or rarest to find? I don't know if that's about birds, not golf balls, but I'm sure there's been some difficult golf balls to find. Or maybe you found a bird as you went for a golf ball as well. But anyways, two questions. Favorites, and what was the rarest bird you've seen?
I think my favorite was one of the first birds to get me into it was the barred owl that came to Central Park in 2020 when we needed an owl the worst time in 2020. Mm-hmm. She arrived 2020 and she just sat there perched on one of the lowest branches right above the walking path and just like gazed right into your eyes all day long in between napping. But you never ever see an owl that just wants to hang with people. But this barred owl would just come down the lowest branch and just chill with all the people staring at her. And first owl, great vibe. We just love Barry the barred owl. They named her Barry. And then found out she was a woman.
Happens. Barred, so, B-A-R-D, owl?
Barn?
B-A-R-R-E-D.
Oh, yeah, I would have never gotten there. Andy, will you?
Oh, and I can take you right into a sad, depressing story about barred owls if you want.
I would, yeah. Well, can you pull up a picture for us of a barred owl?
Now, when you say they, all right, these are the people of Central Park? Or was this like an online presence or something?
This is Cuomo did it, actually.
When did I say they? I don't even remember saying that.
Who named
they
him?
They named...
The people of Central Park. I don't know. But name every owl gets a name. We had Henrietta the Great Horned Owl right after that.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Is there like a Facebook group or Twitter or what? How are you guys naming these owls?
You just show up and people are like, that's Gerald.
Word of mouth. Okay.
Okay.
That's lovely.
Mel, get out of the weeds of the naming process.
I just wanted to know. Nobody names things in our neighborhood. I like this.
Wait till you get an owl that hangs around for 6 months. It'll have a name.
Joe, do you have people like me who like friends that, I mean, you and I will text periodically. Not a lot, but I will admit that most of what I sent you is bird-related texts. Like, if a bird happens in my life, I get your text. Is that just me not being a great friend, or do you have that relationship with a couple people in your life?
No, nothing makes me happier. There's about 12 people in my life that I don't hear from unless it's a photo of a blurry bird.
And they're like, hey.
Hey, what is this? Do you know what this is? And it's usually like a cardinal or something.
Yeah.
It makes me happy to get to ID, help people ID. People send me blurry bird photos from their backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and then there'll be amazing one. My buddy sent me a scarlet tanager, which is a great bird. but it'll either be blurry bird photos, or I'll get photos from people I haven't heard of in 2 years. Of just an empty Auntie Anne's storefront. Those are the two things people send.
Incredible. Yeah, there's been some in between. I'm looking at our text thread right now. I sent you a picture of
the turkey vulture.
The turkey vulture.
Yeah, we had that in our neighborhood.
I think that's what. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is crazy. Yeah,
you know how to send me a. You know how to send me a pretty bird.
Yeah. I mean, we live in a suburban neighborhood, so it was quite a sighting. Me and my daughter were walking, and it came out of like this little swamp area out in someone's backyard and then perched up, and it had huge wings, very loud wings. And it was quite startling. And I was like, oh, that bird is death. And, a thing in our neighborhood, and a bit of a flex. So also we have some parrots that fly. We have some parrots that someone illegally had in Mexico for a while, and they escaped from this. Mm-hmm. I don't know why this eccentric dude had all these parrots, but.
Are they emerald green?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They're monk parakeets. They're taken off in cities all over the country.
Oh, really? So we're getting less special now, or they're successfully breeding?
They're successfully... They're successfully, you know, adapting to cities the way that other birds have done over the years. Monk parakeets might be the city bird of the future, which they're beautiful, but they do have a horrible sounding call. So
they also like destroy fruit trees. They like devour them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They went after our neighbor's kumquats. It was a mess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing evolution and had a habitat to change at a rapid rate.
Yeah. So I imagine like when you go to like a Kauai and there's a bunch of chickens everywhere, then there's a little area in Ybor City in Tampa too, where there's chickens that just like are out and about. And, and at a certain point, the locals, don't care and actually don't like that bird anymore because, like you said, it's become almost pigeon-like and that they're annoying and they're or seagulls. Like, not a lot of... We've lived in coastal cities our whole life, Seattle and San Diego. So seagulls are not well thought of here because they're a bit of... Do you see this parrot going that direction potentially?
I could see it going the way of seagulls, but at least it's pretty. I don't think any bird Seagull is one of the a gull, by the way. There are different types of gulls. I've never seen a bird watcher get excited. Even birders, I've not seen get any interest in gulls.
Zero.
But they will correct you. The first time I bring up a seagull in a guided birding tour, first of all, they're like, now, you know, they're not actually called seagulls. They're different types of gulls. So that one's a herring gull, and that one's a California gull, and that one's a laughing gull. And I'm like, okay, I just learned something. And then they'll be like, and also, we don't care about gulls. they'll be like, I have a friend named Jonathan who knows about gulls, but he's not here today.
Which I guess that's why maybe, so our minor league hockey team, the San Diego Gulls, they just did they just covered it all. They wear all the gulls.
Smart. Smart. I bet they were initially the seagulls, and then some birders were like, "You, that's not a real bird. you're miseducating the." But by the way, you said something important, and that is become like pigeons.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, if there's ever a moment to have a hot take, I just want to say pigeons have gotten a bad rap, a much worse rap than they deserve.
Okay? Yeah, kind of Arby's-like in that regard.
They're the Arby's of birds, yeah. In that they're great, but nobody appreciates them.
Mm. Expand more. What's
what's
so great about a pigeon?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. First of all, people make fun of their nests all over the internet, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've seen terrible pigeon nests all over the internet. It'll be like
I haven't, but I believe you.
It'll be like two twigs on a radiator with an egg that's just like laying down on the radiator. Or it's just these pathetic little nests, and people make fun of how pathetic pigeon nests are.
Yeah.
But pigeons, we did this to pigeons. Pigeons are not wild birds. They were beautiful rock doves living in cliffs somewhere in India. And they didn't need nests because they nestled their little eggs into the side of a cliff wall with a couple twigs that stopped it from rolling off. Then we domesticated the pigeon the same way we turn wolves into dogs, right? We turned them into homing pigeons, so they're domestic. They're no longer wild. They learn to love us. And then we got phones, and we're like, well, we no longer need messenger pigeons.
Right.
And we just kicked them out on the streets to fend for themselves. But that would be like just letting all of our dogs just out into the streets and being like, what's up with all these dogs constantly hanging around us?
We abandoned
them. Why are these dogs so bad? Why are these dogs so bad at making homes for themselves?
Oh, the poor pigeon.
So we have abandoned pigeons. They're not a wild bird. They're not meant for the wild. They're meant to like sit in our home and be fed by us.
Or on a rock, like you said, where they...
And before that, they were meant to be on a cliff.
And that's not the depressing bird story you were going to tell us.
That's not the depressing one, no.
I don't know if that's...
I don't know if I should hit you with the depressing one.
Well, what was the with the second part of the question? What was the rarest bird you found? The grail, to use a collector's term. What's your grail?
I would say there's been two of them. One is I'm a big warbler guy. You know, we all have our favorites. I'm a warbler head. You know.
Okay, a warbler.
This past year, I saw my first prothonotary warbler, which is a beautiful golden warbler. And it just came right down to a little creek and was bathing itself like a little supermodel for us all to watch, throwing its hair back and just dappled sunlight. And, you know, it was my first ever, a lifer. You know, you get a lifer. You're like, oh, my gosh, my first ever.
Yeah.
Prothonotary. Beautiful, beautiful little song. And, you know, just makes your day, prothonotary warbler. And they migrate through. They're only passing through Central Park for a couple days.
Wonderful.
But also, and then I would say Australia, I spent a couple weeks in Australia, and just crazy, crazy insane birds. I don't even know where to start, but I'll just say a superb fairy wren, because it was a delightful little borb.
Wow.
This is a good follow-up question, because one of our patrons asked too, and you don't have to do any of the bits, but Scott said, if you're workshopping any new birding material, my question, maybe I'll play for that, is how hard is it to get audiences on board with bird material? Do you, cause, you know, you're always looking, is there a premise that people resonate with?
So you asked if I'm workshopping any new bird material.
Yeah.
I am always, always. Let's see.
Well, you don't have to do the material for us, but, I don't want to, you know, sell out the act. They can wait till the next special and see you on tour.
Yeah.
But
I'm trying to think if there's one I can talk about. There's Matt Damon bird material. It's going great. there is a breakup bird material going well.
Good.
Let's see. I'll just share a fun fact that makes me look stupid, and maybe I was thinking about maybe doing some material about it at some point, but maybe I won't. Is knowing as much as I do about birds, and some of you are going to think I'm really stupid, I'm really mad at pop culture and media, because knowing as much as I do about birds, I thought that penguins and polar bears coexisted in certain places.
Do they not? They don't, or is the polar bear a predator to the penguin?
We've been fooled by Christmas cards and movies and cartoons. Penguins live all by themselves on the South Pole.
Mm-hmm.
No other land animal exists on the South Pole. On the North Pole is where all the
polar bears,
the snowy owl, the polar bear, the Arctic fox, a ton of animals on the North Pole, no penguins. And some explorer tried to transport some penguins up there, because he was like, these penguins are going to love it up here. And they just immediately got eaten by Arctic foxes.
Yeah. They're gone.
Yeah.
They live alone. They live alone on the South Pole because it's too cold for any other animal. Wow. And also, they need to be alone because they will just be eaten.
Now, there are some African penguins, I believe, right?
From what I understand, they all gravitate closer to the South Pole region.
Okay.
But I don't know about African penguins.
And there, which means that penguin is pretty safe on land then. Because if there's nobody, I mean, they're completely safe on land in the South Pole. If there's no Arctic fog, you said they're totally by themselves down there. But so their main predators are seals and, you know, whatever's looming in the water. Are there orcas south? Yeah, killer whales.
I know in the South Pole, a lot of orcas are going after them.
And, yeah, scariest creature on the earth.
Maybe, and walrus.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I think I've saw it's too many Coke Christmas cards, or where a penguin and a polar bear with a scarf made it think that they were buddies.
It's the wrong pole. I didn't know.
Good stuff.
Here's
a question for Michael. What's your favorite bird call?
Oh, wow. This is...
I'm sorry to put you on. That's like asking my favorite child. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, they're all all of the calls are my children.
Yeah.
Let's see. Favorite bird call. You know, going back to childhood and watching the Masters golf tournament. Perfect segue. Thank you. it's a common bird, but the sweet little spring summer song of the Cardinal is delightful. And you hear it on the Masters every time you watch Augusta National. You hear the Cardinal in the background as Jim Nance is talking about what a beautiful week we have in store for us.
A tradition like none other.
A tradition like none other. Jim Nance in the background is the beautiful Cardinal song. And I grew up with the Cardinal song. And They got a few varieties. So that's the classic. That's the Frank Sinatra for me, a bird song.
Did the what came first then, the love of birds or the love of golf, or did they happen simultaneously? Or go ahead.
But real quick, if you're walking through the woods, possibly the most beautiful bird song, which you don't hear as often as a cardinal, is the wood thrush. A lot of poems written about the song of the wood thrush. So I'll also throw that out there if you want to go look up a wood thrush. What was the next question?
Well, now I want to ask a different question before that. What's one that you hate? That you just, when that bird makes that noise, you go, whew, I want to love you, but I can't. It's just tough on the ears.
Blue jay.
It was so fast.
Stupid, stupid blue jays. The more you get into birds, the more you dislike blue jays. And the dumber you are about birds, the more you're like, blue jays are cool.
You like blue jays.
I like to find a blue jay. I'm like, look, it's blue.
Yeah, that's a different color bird, you know? Like when we hike here in San Diego, everything you see is gray or black. And then at the top of Cal's Mountain, there's I don't even think they're blue jays, but they're blue birds. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, some color.
Oh, yeah. Well, I love a blue bird. You might be talking about a western bluebird.
Perhaps. But that's why I think people just like them.
Oh, and you might be talking about a California scrub jay. There's different types of blue jays on the West Coast.
Yeah, and I don't think they have this terrible noise.
I've never heard them do any type of call. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm talking about an East Coast blue jay.
Okay.
And they look like a beautiful royal blue, but they're bullies. They're bullies at the feeders. They're bullies with owls. And they have this horrible nails on chalk.
Yeah.
Cat call.
It sounds very much like an East Coast bird.
Yeah.
Sounds like we have a gentler version of the, you know, a little more laid back, chill California version of the bird. And you've got
your scrub jays are fun. I like your scrub jays.
Yeah. And you have an obtrusive, you know, a mean, kind of obnoxious,
like
honking, flip you off type blue jay out there.
And maybe this will blow your mind, or maybe it'll bore you to death, but they are cousins of crows. They're in the crow corvid family.
And where are you at with crows? I mean, there's been, if you want to go as far as like great literature goes, crows, ravens, that whole family, I mean, they've been inspirational. So, but where are you at with the crow?
Literature loves crows and ravens. Scientists love crows and ravens.
Yeah.
Every crow study, it's like, they're using another tool. Tools. Tool use. Look at their brains. Tools. These birds are using tools. It's like, we get it. Crows can use tools. You don't need another study. crows are fun. They're a fun-loving, playful, mischievous bird, and they've been shown to go sledding off of snowy roofs. They like to play.
Okay, so they're a smart bird too.
That's nice.
Smart bird.
Mm-hmm. Who's the smartest and who's the dumbest of the birds?
Well, let me just say, the first thing that comes to my mind is that the dodo bird has been mistreated and misunderstood.
Okay.
Because the dodo bird has been found to actually have a pretty large brain. The dodo, turns out, it was actually a smart bird. The reason they called it a dodo is that all the explorers came to this one island where there's no predators. And guess what? The dodos evolved to be friends with everyone because there's no predators.
Mm.
It didn't understand the concept of danger.
Wow.
It wasn't dumb.
Yeah.
It just was friendly.
Until we got there.
So we got there and we just immediately put them all on a spit and ate them. And we're like, explorers were like, these birds are so dumb. They keep coming right up to us wanting to be friends. Isn't that stupid? So we're really mean to these to these peaceful natured smart birds.
Yeah, it's very similar to what the pigeon story there is. Birds have struggled in society because of humans. That's what I keep catching a theme here.
Yeah.
So
it shows you if you live in a place with no danger or no predators, you don't evolve the sense of fear.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That checks out. Yeah, and is really depressing. And this, again, not the depressing bird story you were going to tell us.
Well, maybe there's hope. Maybe there's hope that we will encounter an alien that is just this really fun-loving,
yeah,
wants to be friends with everybody alien.
Yeah, one can hope.
We'll just immediately slaughter them.
Immediately cook them.
Take advantage of that.
Look at this dumb alien at his advanced spaceship who wants to be friends with us.
I have a question. How do you have this hobby? Like, do you go into your cities for comedy and you like go to parks, or do you like do these birding meetups? Or
yeah, do you lead tours? I catch that?
Did you get through books? How?
It's a pretty new hobby for me. I think I learned about it because two reasons. A, Central Park turns out to be this crazy hotspot for birds, one of the best hotspots in the whole country during migration. Birders come and they're like, we've never seen this many birds in our life, because they all, as they're migrating through up north, they all condense into this little tiny area and you can see them all at once. And they're funneled, obviously, because of the city around Central Park. And you wouldn't expect it. And I don't get much nature in Queens, so I make a little trek to Central Park and it's just this little world of peace in the Ramble, which is a famous little area of woods in the center of the park.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what tipped me off on the Ramble was that famous racial incident in 2020. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
When the Karen called the cops.
Oh, this, right.
Black bird watcher.
That was in the Ramble?
It was in the Ramble. Everybody's like, this is more proof of racism. And I was like, there's good bird watching in the Ramble? And there's black birders? I want to be a black birder. I didn't know it was that cool. So that tipped me off. And then I watched a documentary called The Central Park Effect. And Christian Cooper is in the documentary, the same guy. And it talks about how amazing Central Park is. So then I started going, and it's this little oasis, the Ramble. And it's a beautiful place, the Ramble.
Mm-hmm.
And for anybody that's watched Law & Order SVU, you might be like, isn't that where there's a lot of dead bodies? And it's no, there's no dead bodies in the Ramble. That's just Law & Order.
Well, yeah, you know, and they're like, where would you put it there? What woods are there in New York? Just say the Ramble. So again,
exactly. There's
been a good common theme here of people having bad PR and branding that didn't earn that reputation. Arby's, Taco Bell, the Dodo Bird, the Ramble,
pigeons. Yeah.
This is good. I feel like we're clearing up a lot of misconceptions here.
Maybe this is a theme I didn't know I had where I want to stick up for the...
Yeah, mm-hmm. The little guy.
Yeah,
the little guy.
Let me ask you this then. Is the ostrich as dumb as everybody thinks with the way they hide with the head? Or is that even a myth, you know, they put the head in the sand thing?
I want to tell you a really detailed story about ostriches, but first of all, I admit I don't know that much about ostriches.
Okay.
And this is a fun thing about birds, is there's 10,000 different birds and they're all completely different species. So there's all these birds I still don't know about. And I do not know the story of why the ostrich hides its head in the ground. Now I want to know.
Next time we'll have a follow up on. We'll do a ostrich theme episode. You'll deep dive.
But I will say, if you ever have an ostrich farm, the ostrich farmers put out these troughs of rocks, and the ostriches go out and eat these rocks. They love rocks. It's because they don't have a natural digestive system, and the rocks help them digest food.
Really? Well,
yeah.
If I ever go full Swiss Family Robinson, I'll know I don't have to, right? They write ostriches in that? No?
I have not seen that movie in almost 40 years.
Well, you set us up a good segue on that earlier, but like, as far as having two hobbies that could potentially cross over, I mean, golf and bird watching, right there, right?
Oh, a lot of golf courses have great birds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the love of golf was before
you see
the love of
birds. You see a good bird, you can be like, oh, that's a sign we're going to make a birdie. You know, you
I just say it's in the nomenclature. An eagle, a birdie, an albatross, right? I mean,
you're right.
It's all not things I get in golf, but I know the terminology. So there is a lot of crossover.
Well, they're kind of quiet outdoor activities.
Yeah. They lend well to certain personalities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I do want to say, I wish that I could, I kind of wish I could combine more bird watching while I'm golfing. But the moment you take 5 seconds to look at a bird, everybody in your golf group is like, let's pick up the pace. Let's keep it moving. You get to glance, but you got to keep it moving.
Yeah, fair enough.
We're like, we brought you out here to be funny.
You got to be funny and keep up the pace. Because bird watching, you really want to soak it in for at least 30 seconds to get that full bird.
Yeah. Well, if you're playing with me, Joe, you're going to have plenty of time because you're going to be playing a lot faster than me. And that might be make us a good pairing in that you're consistently a stroke or two ahead of me and you can just go get your ball that's, in the middle of the fairway and I'll go on my own little bird watching adventure in the ramble.
I would love that. I'll bring my binoculars. I'll bring my A game.
Yeah.
I'll just sit there on the green waiting for you.
Good. We can go to Balboa Park here, which is my favorite golf course here in San Diego. And it's our Central Park of sorts. So here Absolutely. In San Diego. So, well, I don't know anybody that golfs competitively. So I don't know that youth sports world. I remember there would be a couple kids on your high school golf team. And you're like, okay, when does competitive golf start for a child, Joe? Like, is it a thing you're doing with your folks? Are you, when do tournaments, when does a league, I don't know anything about how youth competitive golf starts.
Well, they're very different levels around the country. I started in competitive golf in West Virginia around age 15, 16, so I was a little late to it, but in West Virginia, I could practice a lot from age 15, 16, 17, and I got good enough to compete in youth, definitely good enough to compete in youth West Virginia golf. But this is a region where you'll be paired against some other high school. Our high school team was pretty good, but you'll be paired against some other high school, and it'll just be a guy that's like, yeah, I heard if I tried out, I'd get to play free golf, and the guy cannot break 1,000. So,
sure.
So there's a lot of states where it's just they need players.
Right.
And then there's other states like Arizona, Texas, California, where the guys that make the team have been playing since they were 6. Mm-hmm. They've been training since they were 6, like Canadian hockey players, you know. They've got all the best coaches, and it's highly competitive in certain regions.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So West Virginia, I it was great that I had a smaller pool because I got to compete at the highest level of, I got to be in the West Virginia Amateur and the West Virginia Open, and I got to play in all these tournaments, not really realizing how small the state of West Virginia is when you live there.
Yeah. So do you, is it like a parent or you who you're, because you'd played before you're 15, 16 and was like your dad or something or some local being like, hey, this kid's really good. Like you need to, or did you kind of catch it yourself, or how does the pursuit of it going into these amateur leagues happen?
I think it was like my dad took me out to this local rinky-dink West Virginia course when I was 12.
Yeah.
And then you start playing a few times with your buddies and your dad when you're 12, 13. These goat tracks, you know, they're called goat tracks.
Mm-hmm.
You pay $8 for it to play all day long.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to avoid the copperheads because they're snakes, because there's sure. no maintenance being done.
Yeah.
one of the courses was called Paradise Lake. It was 9 holes. And you just play, you end up playing with your friends and you're like, I was like, wow, I love this. I'm having the best time of my life and I'm improving rapidly. And in hindsight, part of that is just playing with, you know, you're with your friends all day.
Yeah.
So kind of, but it's a sport where you can see, you can track your progress. So one summer I went from about a 16 handicap to a 5 handicap in about 3 months.
Jeez.
And then the next year, played for the high school team and, you know, went down to like a 2 handicap. So you get to keep seeing, you get to see this rapid improvement. And sort of track that improvement. And then college golf is a whole nother,
right.
Whole other world.
When you show up, so do you go out for the team your freshman year in high school?
I actually played, played on my, high school soccer team my freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, they stuck me at right defender. I imagine, do you guys play soccer?
I did, yeah, a little bit.
Youth. I played youth.
Joe is mm-hmm. I mean, we've been talking about you being a great golfer at this point, but Joe is sneaky athletic. I know that because we played a little pickleball together, and that's the thing. I get said the same thing about me. It's never like, Joe's an athlete. There's always like a qualifier, yeah. Like someone with, I've been described as
the glasses.
Deceptively athletic.
Yeah.
Yeah, people can't see beyond the glasses that you're like, hey, man. It's not my fault my eyes are like this. I'm sorry that I look like this and I'm faster than you. I know that's hard for you, but
you're like, but the glasses.
So you played soccer.
Yeah, I think I was pretty good at youth soccer and also played with friends a lot. And so 9th grade, went out for the high school golf, the soccer team played. They put me, I was actually shockingly, I was fast. So they put me at right defender, which
that doesn't
like,
shock me at all. You look fast.
We're the fast.
Yeah.
People know me as a slow moving guy. So, yeah. But I was a fast runner and they put me at right defender. And I just sat there at right defender and I didn't find it to be very enjoyable. Mm. You know, you're just like, your team wins 5-0 and you've contributed nothing. Or your team loses 5-0 and everybody's like, hey, maybe pick up the slack a little bit back there. You know?
There's not a lot of glory in the defending position.
So I didn't feel like I had that much to do with our team winning or losing. And I was the JV team. And then golf, you're like, okay, well, everything I did correctly was me. And anything bad that happened was also me. So I know exactly which is on me and which, well, it's all on me for golf. So
yeah.
I can take credit or they call it the world's loneliest sport if you're playing badly at golf.
Yeah. Well, it's an immediate parallel to stand-up, by the way. Like, I have seen that most stand-ups do tend to enjoy individual sports more than team sports in these regards.
And it's not like I don't like, I like hanging with other people and cooperating. It's just that you're just kind of a cog. It just felt like kind of being a cog in the military operation, really.
I've told this story on our pod a couple times, but here in San Diego for a while, there was a comedian's basketball game. And it would always be like the stand-ups versus like the local improv guys. And the style of the style of play was so funny because the improv guys would pass so much. They would just yes and each other everywhere. And all the stand-ups were just like dribble, 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 drive, dribble, dribble, pull back 3. Like it was just individuals versus a team. And we would lose every time. Like, because like, oh, this is, but you know, like, I think part of the individualistic thing of golf and why you liked it more than soccer is like, it's only me. Like, I only have me to blame. And same with stand-up, where you're just like, hey, if this goes bad, it's on me. But the good news is you can make yourself better, like, just by working at it.
It might also be the boss thing. Like, in soccer, you got two or three coaches telling you what to do.
Yeah.
And being annoyed at you if you did something wrong.
Mm.
And same as a job, you got a boss you got to answer to. Whereas stand-up, I don't feel like, I feel like I get to, for the most part, avoid bosses.
Yes. It's the best part of the job.
Pretty much all the time I avoid bosses. And that's the same for golf. Like, the coach can't really say much to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's almost more like an avoidance of coach/bosses for me. Cause I like the idea of teammates.
Yeah. But yeah, that makes sense too. Yeah, there's no one telling you what you gotta do. They might give you some advice.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mel.
I think soccer coaches can be on the harsher side. I don't know. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, our daughters play a lot of volleyball. And the soccer players that play volleyball are very tough. They're very emotionally and mentally tough because I think they've dealt with a lot.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, as long as we're defending things that get a bad rep, the whole idea of soccer players being like sissies and and little babies, that's just anybody who doesn't really know soccer players or watched a soccer game. Or I was like, soccer players are tough. The flopping looks bad every time. Mm-hmm. But when you like look at any time there's like a little scrum or they're in there, there's so many elbows and hits and just people like if you've ever actually had someone slide into your feet cleat up as you're running full speed, like soccer players are tough, man.
There's also you're right. It's a little bit like, it doesn't look like hockey, but there's always the guy on your team that is the enforcer.
100%.
That's like,
yeah.
I'm gonna go hurt some people today.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I just like, ran, okay. But they always said that soccer players had a run, like, which was elbows out. You could tell who the soccer players were in track.
Oh, interesting.
Because of their arms.
Well, yeah. When you go out to the sophomore year, you go out for the golf team. Are you immediately like number one player on the team? Are you good? Are you?
We had a pretty good team. So I practiced, I played every day that summer and got down to like a 5 handicap. And I was the 3 man on the team my sophomore year.
That's awesome.
Which is probably pretty awesome for that coach, by the way, that they're like, who's this kid?
It kind of was like the new girl in town that threw her hair back.
Yeah. See, that's I like that story because this happened to you and this happened to our son, where they had the sport they kind of wanted to play or mm-hmm. thought they needed to play, or for whatever reason, a lot of other people played that. And then they got to the sport that they were supposed to play. And immediately, mm-hmm. Melissa, you can tell the story. You tried to play volleyball freshman year.
I missed tryouts because we took my brother to college. But my parents and I were like, we'll just talk to the coach. I mean, of course they want this like 4'11 little tiny girl on their volleyball team. They'll take me. And then I go in the first day of school. They're like, yeah, we already had tryouts. No way. You know? It's my first day of high school. And I'm just like defeated because this was my whole plan. And then that Saturday they had a time trial for cross country. And I had a friend who had trained all summer for cross country. Like, she was the runner.
Yeah.
And they're like, just go out there. Just do it. And I ran with my friend the whole race. And I purposely was a stride behind her at the finish line. And then the coach goes, nope, you won. That I watched. You won.
You let her
win. And yeah. That was, like, I didn't have enough practices to race, you know,
right.
Like officially. And I was a freshman and I was like, okay, I guess I'm number one on the cross country team.
Yeah.
Wait. You intentionally let her win because you knew you had already made it?
Well, it was okay. So sorry, I didn't explain that well.
No,
this was,
go
this
ahead.
Was a very big part of her identity, and she had put all the work in.
Yeah,
and I had done no training.
You didn't want to embarrass her.
I had no training whatsoever because I was gonna play volleyball.
Yeah, it's true. We do have natural talents.
Yeah,
it's true that humans do have some natural.
Well,
proclivities.
Joe, the same thing happened with our son, who freshman year, he's 90 pounds.
He spent the whole summer training
for football,
freshman football,
and he rides the bench the whole. And he's good, and he's fast, and he's shifty, and he's a good little receiver at times. But I mean,
they only played the top guy.
90 pounds is 90 pounds. You can't get off the line. You know, the corner is just like. And you're down, you know, and the poor kid, there's huge pads going around. And then he skateboarded all spring. And then we had it. I told him, I go, we will give you a pair of AirPods if you do one season of cross country. Just one. All you have to give us is one season of cross country. 3 years later, he's now a D1 college runner.
Wow.
Yeah, because it was just
parental. Influence worked.
Yeah, pure bribery too, because we're like, we don't want to do the thing where you force them to do it and then they hate it, but we're like, we know you will be good at this. And very similar, he went out, he was like immediately the number one runner, two runner.
I do think he was not getting played in freshman football, and then he was immediately, you know, the top varsity runner. And
well, winning is motivating.
And so I think that parallel.
Yeah.
Was pretty awesome.
It is motivating mm-hmm. when people are like, wow, you're like really good at this.
So what is, I think I kind of got it earlier, but I didn't know until it didn't click until you started talking about, but it's probably the tournaments. What does like recruiting look like? And like, how do you end up being a collegiate player? Is it they go to these big tournaments and they see your scores and stuff, and I guess golf has such clear tracking metrics that it's actually probably fairly easy for a college coach to see if somebody's a good player, or how's that work?
Well, I was not running in the same pools as the top 25 college recruits.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The big 25 schools. So I know with those schools, there are really high level junior tournaments sanctioned called AJGA. And the top juniors in the world play in these AJGA tournaments and have junior rankings. So you can see the top 100 juniors in the country and in the world just from straight up world rankings.
Yeah.
Wow.
And basically those top 100 are going to be the ones that are recruited.
Mm-hmm.
Before
you go on to this next thing, this is one of my favorite thing that athletes do. Mm. Athletes like Joe does this, and you were a college athlete, and my son does this. They will always deflect how good they were because they like we're like Joe is. If you golf with Joe, most likely will be the best golfer that most humans will ever golf with. Because he was a college golf, but you always, all of you do this. You're like, but I wasn't like the best. Because you competed against the best. And you're like, so someone going like, Joe, you're an incredible golfer. You immediately go to, there were hundreds of people better than me. Da 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 da.
Sure.
But there is a humility a lot of times that comes from athletes because you're like, dude, I got so many people beat me, but compared to a normal human being, you're unbelievable, especially golf, like that has so many civilians that play, you know. But anyways, you did it right there. Where I'm like, how'd you end up being a college golfer? You're like, well, these other kids were better.
Yeah, it's true. I do that story, and I've got plenty more of that where that came from.
Yeah. But anyways, continue.
Michael Costa does that with his tennis, the host of The Daily Show. He played college tennis on a national championship team. And he just talks about how when he went pro, he was ranked like 900th in the world.
Yeah. And you're like, that's actually pretty good. You're the 900th best male. Go ahead.
I had a very similar experience to that in high school. And I would tell jokes about it, about how well I was playing in college my freshman year, And then the national rankings come out and it says I'm 573rd in the country. And I'm like, I think that was as good as it gets for me. I think I was peaking.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can't, and in sports, it is not subjective. And comedy, you could never do a peer ranking. So you can't do the comedy power rankings. It's too, at least, you know, in golf, you're like, nope, they're just better.
But I'll give you the inspiring sports movie version of this story.
Great.
Okay.
Okay.
Good. This will be a good place to wrap.
I was a late bloomer, late starter. I was in a tiny state with not a lot of top golf facilities. And not any top golf facilities, probably. But I wasn't recruited out of high school. I always wanted to just focus for a year. Also, there's big winters in West Virginia, so it's an 8-month-a-year sport compared to other states.
Mm-hmm.
But I really just wanted to spend a year where I just practiced golf, and I took a year off. I lived in Florida by myself, at working the range ball picker-upper guy at TPC Sawgrass. And I just grinded on the range, grinded. And by the end of my year off, I got recruited and a small scholarship to Davidson College because I won a couple, I won a couple tournaments in that year off. Won my club championship. Still got my name on the plaque.
That's fun. I love that.
So I did the Rudy thing, but it actually worked out and got the small scholarship to Davidson after the year off. So I did have to do the year off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
I was the old, and then everybody just knew me as the old man because I was a year older than everybody.
A year older. Now, did you play all 4 years at Davidson?
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. 4 years.
Everybody at Davidson is encouraged to do a semester abroad. So I did do a semester abroad at St. Andrews.
Oh, amazing.
I did live right off of the famous old course.
Yeah.
And I got to do the bucket list, play on the old course quite a few times, which was playing with friends, playing with my dad. It was a fun semester abroad, but I played all 4 years, yeah.
Do you do you still enjoy it? It's fun? Like, you like playing golf?
Oh, yeah. I would say a solid 5 years after college where I was, like, having trouble, a little bit of trouble enjoying it. I was sort of avoiding it.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I played, it was like, I was always rusty and I was always like, it's hard to enjoy this when I know how much better I would be if I practiced for 2 months.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But now I absolutely love it. In the last 10 years, it's just become pure fun and I've sort of learned how to play taking a month off and just picking a club up and playing again. I've sort of learned how to, a new skill, which is to just play with zero warm up and zero practice.
Yeah. Well, it is, it's a great sport to have and to build in your youth because it is one you can keep playing. You know, when we had Greg Warren on, it's harder to wrestle casually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now he just has to watch these 19-year-olds wrestle.
Yeah.
That's his biggest joy with wrestling is just to watch college kids wrestle.
You can't text your buddies like, hey, man, we got a mat time, 9:10 a.m. on Saturdays if you can't help you make weight. That was the old thing about baseball, too. Like, you got 17 friends? If so, we can come together and play a game of baseball. Also, none of us can hit a pitcher anymore. Yeah. So, well, that's great, man. Joe's got he started doing a TikTok series, or at least it just started popping up in my feed of like, essentially it's wonderful. It's a great parody. I'm kind of burying the lead here of he'll give all these tips, but he'll say the main key is to don't suck. And I laugh at it every time. Take some time to promote whatever you want to promote. And then we're going to get out of here.
Oh, okay. Well, I will be doing Salt Lake City October 10 and 11. I'd love if you came. I'll be at Wise Guys. And October 16 to 19, Rooster Teeth Feathers out there in California.
Sunnyvale. I think you're there that weekend. You're there for one of Joel's races.
Come on out.
Yeah. You got to buy a ticket.
Like in and out.
Yeah, no comps.
Yeah.
So it's it's Salt Lake, it's Sunnyvale, and then Chattanooga on October 22nd for the
comedy
festival.
Kitchen. Oh, there you go. Great.
Those are my main things, awesome. And then I have a comedy special that's on Hulu called Cult Classic, but it's also free on YouTube as well. So either one.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time for us. It was nice to chat with you, man. We'll see you on the road. See you around. Happy bird watching and golfing.
Thank you. I hope to see you soon.
Yeah, same, same.
This is awesome. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. We want to give a special shout out and thanks to our As Essential as Oils level patrons. That's $25 up a month. And up, you get it. Thank you, everybody. It means a lot to us. That is Adam Bush.
Avril Griffiths.
Allison Nelson.
Andy and Darlene Gerton.
Bonnie Galindo.
Brandon Schoenberger.
Carrie Teague.
Chris Finn.
Christopher and Bridget Finlin.
Code to Grow.
Courtney Eibling.
Damaris Diaz Steven.
Daniel Owens.
Dave and Melissa Cox.
Dave Hoagland.
Dustin Daly.
Jason and Francis White.
Jen Thirk.
Jonathan Rivera.
Jordan Cowan.
Juliana Smith.
Lori Amos.
Lauren and Nick Rachel.
Matt and Sam Slosdom.
Michelle Carlson.
Nick Cordell.
Norman Perron.
Preston and Rachel Wilson.
Also, if that's Perrin, I'm sorry. Also, Preston and Rachel Wilson. I'm sorry if we mess these up. We're trying our best.
You're up.
Raina Camps.
Robert and Nellie Capen.
Stephen Menya.
Zachary and Tammy Moyle.
And Tiffany Payne.
Bye. Thank you.